Good afternoon, members. I'd like to call this conference committee for House File 888 to order. And thank you all for being here. What we'd like to do first off is have staff go through the new spreadsheet that aligns with... Go through the spreadsheet first, okay?
Mr. Chairman, members, we're going through the spreadsheet. It should be up at the table and handed out. It's dated 4/30/2017. It reflects a conference target of general fund fiscal year 18-19 net reduction of $30 million. I'll start by going through the PCA. You can look at the columns that are labeled conference. And this is just change items. First, for just overview of the PCA, the bill or the proposal eliminates all the general fund funding for the Pollution Control Agency. Basically, all the general fund appropriations on line 16 through 29 are changed to the environmental fund, with the exception of the recycling composting grants. They were originally $1 million per year from the general fund. And you can see now on line 43, they are $500,000. So they got reduced in half. But again, all the money from the general fund has been switched on to the environmental fund. So that's a general fund savings of $11.786 million and $11.57 million in the tails. On the environmental fund, again, most of these items here are swapping of funds from general fund to environmental fund. A couple items I'll point out. Line 32 is the house operating reduction of $2.5 million per year. And then there's also the impaired water list on line 35 of $150,000. And then there is the business-friendly data services. That was an item from the house in the governor's bill, $800,000. The Met Council wastewater biofuels on line 40, that was a house item for $300,000. The plastic bag recycling grants on line 45, $20,000, that was a Senate item. Shell Rock pilot program, line 47, is $300,000 currently. So it's a net increase of $12.356 million from the environmental fund. $11.4 million in the tails. Under other funds, the proposal has the house's $4 million from the closed landfill investment fund for landfill remediation, and then the Senate bringing in the Crow Wing County closed landfill. Then the other item I'll note, the house originally had a one-time transfer from the environmental fund to the general fund of about $4.3 million. This new proposal has $2.5 million per year annually going from the environmental fund being transferred to the general fund. So the net spending increase for PCA under this proposal is $5.4 million, including all funds, and again, that's an elimination of the general fund appropriations. On to DNR. The change items appear on page 2. General fund change items. The first one was a house provision and in the governor's proposal for conservation easements for $250,000. We are doing the house's proposal dealing with Lake Coronas extension, where basically we cancel the existing appropriation and reappropriate it. It nets out at costing the general fund zero. Of line 92. On lines 99 and 100 are the Senate's proposals for $250,000 per year for local parks grants and local trail connection grants. Then we also have the Senate's on line 102 and 103, one-time general fund money for snowmobile grant aids and ATV grant aids. On line 106 is sort of a hybrid between both the House and the Senate had an increase for law enforcement for conservation officers. It's $1 million per year. It's a little bit less than what the House had, and the Senate was moving money between the AIS. We are not doing the AIS reduction, but this is $1 million new per year for conservation officers. And there's some language in the bill directing how that should be spent. And then we have on line 107, a one-time appropriation of $1.92 million for legal costs. So the net general fund increase for DNR is $5.592 million, and 3.25 of that is in the tails. On the Natural Resources Fund, we have the House's $250,000 per year on line 117 for economic analysis of water appropriations. Then we have the House's recommendations under forestry, the $2 million in 18 and 19 for reforestation of DNR lands. This is all out of the Forest Management Investment Account. $500,000 for the Sustainable Timber Harvest Study, and $2 million per year for the Next Gen Forest Data Systems. And then some of those amounts are reduced in the tails. Again, those are all the House's from the House's proposal. On line 122, we have the House's proposal for increasing the state park fees. That increases the appropriation from the state parks account by $9.8 million. And there's, when we get to the revenue part of the bill, we'll tell you what that is. It's the House numbers. And then the last two items, the Voyager ATV trail on line 129 was in both bills, $150,000. And the Virginia ATV trail of $50,000, which was a Senate proposal. So the total increased spending from the Natural Resources Fund is exactly $19 million over base. On next page on the Game and Fish Fund changes, these are line 139 is a slight increase over the Senate amount for the AIS Center at the U of M. It's at $410 per year. And that is out of the Heritage Enhancement Account. We're doing the lead shot study for $20,000. That was the Senate proposal. And the shooting sports site study was in both bills for $30,000. Those two items were from the Heritage Enhancement Account. And they were carrying a statutory appropriation increase that's due to the two-line certification. They increase revenue for that. And that will go to the walleye account for stocking. So the total increased spending on the Game and Fish Fund is $1.47 million. Under DNR total, line 157, you see the increase for the agency for all funds is over $26 million for fiscal year 18 and 19. General fund increase is roughly $5.6 million. Under revenues, line 161 is the cancellation of the Lake Coronas appropriation. It's a general fund net. Under the increase of the park fees, there's actually there's a slight general fund gain due to sales tax collected on park fees. That gets us about $317,000 for the biennium to the general fund. And then there's one other general fund slight reduction. The Senate's Military Veterans Free Park Pass has an $8,000 reduction general fund. That same provision also reduces the parks account by $100,000. On line 167, you'll see the revenue due to the parks increase from the House at $4.9 million in 18 and 19. Line 172 is a House item for increasing the permit fees for hydropower. Deputy Register snowmobile fees was in both bills. That's $10,000 per year to the snowmobile account. Fort Ridge Estate Park, the reviews in the Senate language in the bill, so that has a little bit negative effect on the parks account of $49,000 per year. Then the Senate non-motorized boat registration, will affect the water rec account in the AIS account. That's a Senate provision. A couple last items here are the mineral licensing fee exemption. That was in both bills. Line 180, 185 and 186 is the two lines fishing endorsement. That affects the game and fish operations and the walleye account, $600,000 each for both of those. And then the sales tax on park fee also adds a little bit of revenue to the legacy accounts. And then the Lake Vermilion Boathouse lease affects the special revenue fund and the tails. That's it for DNR. The last agencies here, Met Council Parks, this is the Senate's proposal of $330,000 per year general fund reduction that is replaced by a $330,000 per year from the lottery and lieu account. So their net overall appropriation change is zero for Met Council Parks. There's no change to Conservation Corps. They're being funded at base. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, line 232, the funding the House's proposal for wetland conservation efficiencies. This was also in the governor's bill, a slightly higher amount. Line 235, funding the House's easement stewardship, $125,000 per year. This was also in the governor's proposal. Both House and the Senate had the $11 million per year reduction for soil and water conservation districts. Line 239, the Senate's $240,000 per year for dredging the Minnesota River. And those are the last changes to Bowser. So their net general fund decrease is $20.97 million. And most of that is due to the Soil and Water Conservation District reduction. Minnesota Zoo is at $200,000 per year increase, a little bit less than what the House had. There came in at $500,000. And the Senate had no increase coming in. So it's $200,000 per year ongoing for the Minnesota Zoo. Second last page, Science Museum, is no change. They're being funded at base. Minnesota Board of Tourism, the special events is being paid for with an increase of $600,000 per one time. And then the last item I want to point out here that's in the bill is on line 301. This is an item that is currently in the bill. It's county buffer aid, $2.3 million. This is a version of an item that the House had in their legacy bill. It's being funded here starting in fiscal year 19 at $2.3 million per year using general fund money. And then the last item under Department Administration, we are taking the House's proposal for the additional $500,000 from the permanent school fund for dealing with the Bundy Waters Canoe Area land and sale exchange. The Senate had this within DNR. The House had it in admin, and we're doing the House proposal. The last page here is just a summary by general fund showing the total changes. Again, for all the agencies combined, including the $2.3 million we have going out for county buffer aid, there's a net reduction versus a forecast of $2.45 million. There's general fund revenue changes of $5.4 million, and that nets us to $30 million of a net general fund reduction. I'll also point out on line 655, we adopted the language appropriating the money from the Volkswagen settlement for the propane bus conversion grants of $1.5 million per year. So that's it for the spreadsheet.
Thank you. Questions, comments, members? Senator Thomas Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mueller, just for explanation purposes, so the $30 million negative is replaced, that's general fund dollars, but is it replaced with other funds within the bill so that there's an actual net increase in spending, or is there, is it even, or how does it actually work out?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Thomas only. Largely, yes, especially if you count what's going on in the Clean Water Bill also. If you note on line 315, this is the spending by all funds for all agencies. It's actually increased by $14 million. So that includes the general fund reduction. So the bringing in of other funds or spending with other funds, this doesn't include the $22 million that's in the Clean Water Conference Committee right now also. So if you add that to this, there would be about a net increase of $36 million of additional spending to all these agencies, which includes the general fund reduction.
Senator Thomasoni, follow up? Yes, sir.
Tell me a little bit about forestry. I saw that there's some new numbers here, and I'm not sure if they're reflecting something that helped or didn't help, but I know that one of the things that we're concerned about is the ability to for the DNR to put up acreage of over 800,000 cords, and I know that part of the issue is if the LP plant does come to Minnesota, we're going to need quite a bit more wood, and we have to get up to about a million. And is the new budget reflecting some ability for the DNR to put up some more wood, or is that somebody else's area?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas, I can answer that from what I know, and I'm sure the DNR can maybe explain a little bit better too. First of all, there is no general fund reductions to the DNR forestry area. The Senate had some coming in, but those have been taken out. So all the new spending on lines 118, 120, and 121 is all additional money that's out of the forest management investment account. The main one, I think, that pertains to whether they can put up more cords of wood out of the state forest is on line 120. The sustainable timber harvest analysis. This is $500,000 for the study. The Senate had a little bit less than that coming in, but this is what the governor was requesting for a study to basically look at what you're talking about to see if they have the capacity to do more harvesting out of state lands.
Senator Thomasoni? Senator Thomasoni, when would you anticipate that those additional cords would be starting to be put up for that? I mean, you have...
When?
Gaze into your crystal ball here for
me. My crystal ball says let me find out if they're coming first. And that'll give you a better answer. But, if they make the announcement here early in May, I would think it's going to be a year or two before the plant's ready to go, and so that it would be within the next couple of years, I would think. So, but I do believe that it would take that long for the DNR probably to find the extra wood also, and then we're looking at I think a couple hundred trucks a day that they'll be needing. So it's a big number, and I think we have to get it up to a million somewhere along the way here. So.
And I heard you bought a new chainsaw this weekend too. Is that true?
Actually, I won one last year, but my kid already got it from me. So,
well, very good. I bought a couple apple trees this weekend. Other questions or comments, members? Okay. Then we'll go to the policy provisions in the bill. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to go through Article 2, and I'm just going to point out what is different from what has already been adopted by the Conference Committee. So the first language that has not been dealt with yet is on the page 49 of the amendment. You'll see a new section that establishes a pilot study for Cross Lake, similar to the new one for Gull Lake that was proposed and had already been adopted by the Conference Committee. And then the next change would be on page 50, section 27. The Conference Committee had already adopted this provision, but the DNR had requested changes, and there's some new, mostly technical differences, but those have been incorporated into section 27. And then the same thing on page 52, section 31, the DNR had requested some changes for the Fort Ridgely Golf Course language, so that has been incorporated. The next additions would be on page 76. This is the start of the buffer language. The DE would reflect the Senate position on the buffer language, except for if you look on page 77, section 92 is from the House side, and the major difference here was that the public waters definition had been different. The Senate had the continuous 12-month continuous water in it, and so this DE would not have that provision. The next provision would be section 99 that hadn't been adopted by the conference committee. This is the House language with a technical correction. If you remember, the Senate had just two sections in the House and combined it into one.
What page was that, section 99?
86. Sorry about that.
Thank you. And then would you repeat that, please?
Sure. It'd be section 99. This is the House provision with some technical changes. And if you remember, the Senate had the same language. It was just in two different sections.
Okay.
All right. The next section is on page 102. This is the landfill. This DE would have the Senate provision on the Crow Wing County landfill. And then there's some alternative language in response to the freeway landfill. You'll see on pages 102.11 and 102.15, there's a new definition for priority qualified facility. And this is new language for the freeway landfill. And then if you move on to section 117 on page 105, this is the new language, basically allowing the PCA to take environmental response action against a priority quality facility, which was defined earlier, and then allowing them to request and then compel an owner-operator who fails to comply to comply. And then if you look on page 106, there's civil penalties as well. And then there's a few other sections, and if you want me to go into more detail, I'd probably defer to this Senate because they've worked more closely on this language, but otherwise I could continue.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair and members, yeah, what this does is we're talking about the new language that starts on page 105, and what it does is provides a specific program for ones that fit in this priority category, and it requires actions and a settlement at the priority facility, and it also gives the Pollution Control Agency the powers to acquire this priority qualified facility, if necessary, including they have some existing condemnations, but this kind of broadens that and tells them that they can acquire fee title also under that if the owner's not cleaning up and not bringing it into the program, and so that's basically that new provision or those new provisions on it. I can go into more detail, but I don't want to waste your time.
Okay,
if people have questions.
And then, Mr. Chair, we're ready to continue. You can go to page 120. It will be the next section that hadn't been previously adopted. Section 135, this is the House provision on this particular section. The Senate had some additional language regarding feedlot exemptions from EAW requirements, and that is not included with this language. The next section is on page 131, section 144. This is the riparian protection aid that we saw in the spreadsheet walkthrough. This basically just establishes the process for getting that money out to the counties. And then the next section would be on 136, page 136, section 148. This is a revised version of the Sophia's Law. This would be just a one-year delay on the entire provision instead of the provision that dealt only with the houseboats. And then on the bottom of page 137, the Sand Dune State Forest Management Plan. This is a modified version of the House. It no longer would require that county to approve the Forest Management Plan. And then on 138, Section 153 hadn't previously been adopted. This is the Senate provision on calcareous fens in Pipestone County. And then the final one would be on 141, Section 160. It's a revisor's instruction. It was just related to the Crow Wing County provision. And then I do think I missed over, I think there was a change to the Senate's propane bus. There was a change to get rid of the eligibility for fueling stations.
Mr. Chair, just a couple of things. That's one. There was also a change to something that was adopted earlier on the exemptions for the hydro power facilities, where it's removed that if they're under FERC, it's only for those that are pre-1937 or whatever that will get the exemption. So new ones will not get it, even if they're regulated by FERC. And we did accept, or the House did accept a couple of Senate provisions on calcareous fens and rare natural communities. I want to just add those to those. Those had not been adopted at the last conference committee meeting.
Questions, members? Comment? No. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and trying to quickly go through this thing. Is there anything in this bill about the Enbridge pipelines?
No.
Thank you.
Did you want something?
No.
That's a good idea.
Mr. Chairman, would you like an amendment?
Senator Thomas Oley.
Would you like to do an amendment?
I like amendments.
Yeah. I have an A11 amendment. I don't believe it's controversial.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, you can.
So, Mr. Chairman, the A11 amendment is putting back into law what was in law a number of years ago. And I think it was taken out of law in 2014, but it's been in since like 2002. And all it does is say that disabled workers from the railroad or the postal service can get free fishing licenses like they did in the past. And I believe the reason that it was removed is because there was a belief that nobody was utilizing it. And we found out that that wasn't true. And the reason to do it is because there's, if you look right above the two, clause 7 and 8, which are new language, right above there is clause number 6. These people didn't pay Social Security, so they don't qualify underneath number 6. And so it's just adding them back in. And I don't think it's a big deal, and I don't think it's any much of a cost item if it is. But it's going back to what it was a few years ago. So I think we inadvertently took them out is what actually happened. And then moved the A11 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
So, Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize. You and I had a meeting beforehand and talking about amendments. And Senator Thomas Sony did stop by actually this morning when we had our meeting, and we did talk about this. My question would be, Senator Tomassoni, do we know, or does anybody know how many people we're talking about here?
Senator.
Well, I don't think it's very many. but I don't know exactly how many it is. I do know that there was a, I think this was eliminated in the 2014 law, but it had been in statute since like 2002. And maybe the,
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. If I could have staff explain it, he brings along with him some institutional knowledge, I think, as we all know, so if you could just run it by us a little bit.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, my remembrance of this is that it was an exemption, not a free license. You just, if you had your card, you would just show it. So Dina didn't know how many people were doing it, and they thought no one was using it. They told us, anyways, that nobody was really using this anymore. But under this proposal, they actually get issued a free license. And so you will learn next year how many people use this. You'll be able to keep track of them better in this manner.
So Mr. Chair, so in the past, all they had to do was show their card. They would identify themselves to a CO on the site?
We have several places in law where we have, you're not required to have a license. And if I remember right, this was one of those. I haven't looked at it specifically recently, but that's how I remember it. The one thing about this is, since it is a free license, you'll get a count from DNR on how many there are.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Tomasoli.
Apparently, this is an excerpt from the page 25 of the 2014 Minnesota Fishing Regulation Handbook, and it said residents receiving disability benefits under the Federal Railroad Retirement Act or U.S. Postal Service, the person must carry proof of disability retirement benefits.
That's what I remember.
That's what it was, and I think we actually put in law that's no longer valid in 2014, right. Correct? And then. And so this is just reinstating it and actually making them get a license, I guess.
Senator,
Mr. Chair, maybe the DNR, I see they're here at the table. If they can give us, Mr. Meyer, can give us an idea.
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Please. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Knopf is correct. This was repealed in 2014 under the uncession laws that the DNR proposed, as we couldn't tell how many people were actually being impacted by this provision. Since that time, I've received one phone call from one person, and I directed them to Senator Tomasoni. So this is the effect of that call, I guess. So we don't know how many issued licenses we'll be issuing or what the costs will be to the Game and Fish Fund. I think it's safe to say that this will, to a certain degree, increase that deficit in the Game and Fish Fund, not by a lot, but it's money that we'll be losing. So there are a few, I think it's 50 cents or something to issue the license, but it would give us an idea at least to track how many people are using this exemption.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you have your wallet out. So I'm assuming that
and that's hard.
You're going to cover it, so I guess that's really not an issue anymore. Mr. Chair, seriously, it doesn't sound like we're talking very many people here, and I would encourage the committee to certainly consider this as a friendly amendment. We don't know how many people we're talking about, but it certainly isn't that they're not deserving of that. So,
Mr. Chairman, the fiscal impacts won't be great. We can certainly try to track it and report back, but it's the larger issue
you
in front of us.
That with all the increases in the walleye stamps that have been.
You could request
the
walleye stamps. Yeah.
Everybody have
them? The larger increase in the issue that we're facing with the Game and Fish Fund deficit in the coming years certainly is a lot greater to talk about rather than this small exemption here.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Westrom.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Senator Tomasoni, I'll defer to him.
I should actually go to Senator Westrom, because the first thing I was going to say is if you look under the subdivision, the first group of people that we exempt are blind, and then yes, and then the second group are recipients of supplemental Social Security. And if you go down, you'll see that we have six different categories of people, and I, like I said, I not only were these two groups not required to get a license, they were able to fish free of charge, and so it's just adding them into the statute, and I don't think it's a big deal at all.
Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm actually going to speak against this amendment. So, and I pay for my license, just so you know, Mr. Chairman, but interesting to know that. And the reason I don't, not on the basis of big numbers, I guess at some point everyone that benefits and enjoys fishing should maybe be treated equally and contribute equally, and I have a few constituents that have been bugging me for a while to try to find money to offer a free fishing license to senior citizens over 70 or some age or 80, just because they think it's a good gesture, but that's kind of the road this takes us down, and I understand their request. Just been a costly one, and I just would be concerned we go down that road, and others and myself can have amendments too, and then we just exacerbate the problem of the fishing fund needing more money. So that'd be my caution.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas-Sullivan.
Senator Westrom, there's nothing to be cautious about here, because these people were fishing for free up until 2014. So it's not as if we're inventing a new category here or anything like that. We're just putting them into statute. And so I think and if you look at the other people that are already included here, you'll find that we're doing exactly the same thing for people who have disabilities in several different categories. And so this isn't a slippery slope thing. This is just reinstating what we did before.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, did you have a comment?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to comment about Senator Westrom fishing, and if anybody's going to be taking him out, it's going to be me, so the DNR doesn't have to worry too much about the impact. Actually, I'm going to be taking his son out, and he's the one who knows how to fish.
So. Sure. So, refresh my memory. In 2014, when this provision was repealed, who is the chair of the Environment Committee in the Senate?
I can.
Senator Thomas,
I'm just making mistakes once in a while.
All right. Well, Senator Heintzman.
To Senator Westrom's point, thank you, Mr. Chair. I hear we're saying that there is no slippery slope, but I mean, in all seriousness, is there an amendment that should be drafted that should say that disabled self-employed individuals would be exempt from buying a license? I mean, I think it's a reasonable question, Senator.
So, okay. Well,
they might already be in there.
Okay. You know, I personally, I don't like this either, but in deference to Senator Tomasoni, I would encourage a yes vote. So, any further questions? Okay. With that, all those in favor of the Tomasoni A11 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Sure.
Yes, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, I have the A15 amendment.
Next. Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A15 amendment.
Members, you may or may not have these in your packet. I'm not sure.
We do. We should. Everybody have the A15? Anybody not have it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to defer to Mr. Knopf, but it has to do with the landfill that seems to be the landfill of discussion in this legislation. So I'll defer the
Mr.
explanation to him.
Mr. Chair and members, parts of this are fairly technical. There were a couple of places where priority
qualified facility, was the word priority was not included. So wherever you see that, that's just a technical to fix it. And there was also on 1.4 there was a misreference. For each of the landfill sections, we're putting in the effect of the day following enactment so they can get started sooner on it rather than waiting until July 1st. And then on 1.8 of the amendment, you can see that it adds the word indemnify and then on 1.10 it's must indemnify and then after harmless and defend. They're holding harmless and defend. And then also there's a specific requirement on 1.15 with the commissioner on behalf of the state to enter an agreement with the U.S. EPA to settle all federal claims at priority for non-owner potentially responsible parties. It's basically directing the commissioner so to ensure, because under state law you can waive, you can take care of it under this under these provisions as far as those non-owner liabilities, but this is to make sure to get rid of the EPA ones. So that's part of the defense and part of the indemnification is for the state to take over those responsibilities, and this is a part of an agreement, and that's basically the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Engelbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. There's been a lot of time and effort put into this this legislation, as you well know, and I guess I'll defer any questions to that you may have to Mr. Knopf, but I think it's a good way to resolve, at least get the ball rolling for what seems to be a real loggerhead when it comes to this landfill situation, I believe over in Bloomington. Burnsville. It was in the right letter category. Anyhow, so it is, you know, what the consequences will end up being, I guess it remains to be seen, but there are people that have been involved in this for a long time. There's been a lot of dollars and angst that's gone forward here, but sooner or later the state of Minnesota's got to act on this, and hopefully this is going to get us going in the right direction.
Thank you. Representative Ubel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Knopf. So this additional language in here with the indemnification insertion of the languages and things is really strengthening the bill in terms of the large number of individual companies and things that have been, and I will use the term, indicted in this landfill.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly right. And I think that the new paragraph C there also goes a long way in getting at that, to because, again, you know, when the state can start down this road of cleaning it up, the important thing here is because those letters have gone out based on the federal superfund, and so it's important to make sure that the state's involved in trying to basically get the feds to back off.
Great. Thank you.
We have a testifier, Commissioner Kadelka, Assistant Commissioner Kadelka. Identify yourself for the record and look forward to your comments.
Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. First off, I want to thank the committee and the Association of General Contractors' help with language that's in here on freeway landfill. It addresses a number of the concerns that were made by our agency. It still has some work that we're going to look over and fine-tune it. Our concern with the amendment, though, is it brings back one of those concerns that was rectified. It brings back the words indemnification and all that comes with it. A closed landfill program has a history of success of being able to prevent non-owner operators from falling under their purview of Superfund and EPA through the current program. The word indemnification, my understanding, is to address those folks, but there's no need. We have examples of a number of sites in the closed landfill program that are federal Superfund sites, and EPA has an agreement with the state that the state will take the lead due to cleanup and that it won't take any further actions. And an example of this is WDE, where it was a Superfund site. The Fed started its actions. The closed landfill program was created. The Feds backed off and have stayed away. Even now, as we have a proposal on the governor's bonding bill to work on WDE for $11.35 million, the EPA has stayed away and allowed the state to take the necessary measures to make sure the site is cleaned up. And that includes private individuals asking EPA to look at seeing if there are responsible parties to cover those costs. EPA has kept its agreement with the state, We don't believe the word indemnification is needed to provide that goal. In fact, it only just opens up a blank checkbook for situations where there are legal cases against each other. We think it's a more appropriate way, as the bill attempts to do, is by not allowing those cases to go forward instead of just having the state pay for them and just still have the legal cases and the lawyer fees accumulating.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I know the word setting precedent seems to be a big issue, or a big word that everybody worries about, and justifiably so, I think, in some cases. But it just seems like, a lot of work has been done, and a lot of folks have been, businesses have been involved in this and thinking that it's done, and I'm not sure that the word indemnify is going to be as terrible as you may be saying it is. Frankly, we meet every year to take care of those injustices, if that were the case on anything. So I guess I feel comfortable with this and working with the folks, and we need to I think step back once in a while and realize that at one time this person, the way I understand it, was doing things according to the state and been going on for quite some time, and then all of a sudden the roles of that particular business change, and in talking with the commissioner, I know it's been challenging at the very least in dealing with this gentleman, but somebody's going to have to take the initiative to set something in place here to move this ahead, and I'm very comfortable with this amendment, and I would ask for folks to support it.
Commissioner Kadelka, this is an issue that has been here since fairly early in the session, and I think there's a broad recognition that we need to address this issue. We've had a couple of different sets of language that have been brought forth, and we've amended it, and here we are doing it again today. But I refresh my memory, what language has MPCA brought forward to either this committee or in the Senate to address this issue that you know is a very big concern for so many people?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and committee members, we've testified in a number of committees about our concerns so that they can be addressed by the proposers. We've also worked with the group that brought forward the language that you see in the amendment today and had discussions with them as we continue to move forward, and we'll continue that role of working on an alternative that meets the principles that we've been looking at, make sure the site gets cleaned up, provides us protections for the non-owner operators that are provided under the closed landfill program, make sure we don't create that precedent or liabilities for the state beyond what's afforded to those in the program, and also make sure that's financially done in a responsible manner. And we'll continue those conversations working with the group that the Association of General Contractors have pulled together, and we'll be happy to be a part of that team as we refine this language.
Well, Commissioner Kadelka, you know, it would make the legislative process much simpler from my perspective if the MPCA was actually engaged in this process rather than just reacting to the language that other people bring forward. Why doesn't the MPCA sit down with folks and have a conversation and actually hammer something out? This is the hands-off, negotiation style that this administration has used throughout this legislative session, particularly in this committee, has gotten us to the point to where we are now. We're wondering what works, what doesn't work. And without more direct interaction by the agencies, so we do put something together. You know, what are we going to do? We're going to take another run at this, and then tomorrow or next week or 2 weeks from now, we're going to try something else. It's incumbent upon the state agencies to get involved in this process and do it earlier. So with that, members, to the A-15 amendment, Senator Ingebrigtsen's amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed. The amendment is adopted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Next. Mr. Chair, I have the 848.
Okay, the 848 amendment is next. Representative Swierczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is just pertaining to a pretty narrowly focused issue that I think Senator Yuki and Representative Green have been dealing with in their district. They have a private road, a private landowner who has been essentially threatened for potential litigation to gain access to that private road that would connect to some publicly owned land. And this would just encourage the department to focus on encouragement financially rather than using civil action through the courts to gain access. That's what the amendment does. I appreciate your support.
Questions or comments, members? Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, again, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. This is an issue dealing with a piece of land that the state has taken over from the federal government and some landowners who have gated the road. They consider a private road. It's actually been in existence for a period of 80 to 100 years that we can document that it has been used. They recently gated it for what they call their safety, which we understand. We're currently working with them and the county. Actually, we have a meeting with the county board members on Thursday, I believe, to try to talk through this issue and resolve it. We do not support the amendment. We have many, many parcels like this throughout the state that are isolated, that have no benefit except for the adjacent landowners that we do not have any access for. And we're, as we talk about in committee, talked about today in Ways and Means, talked about in Lessard Sams, these isolated parcels are the parcels we want to sell and develop access to. So this amendment is what I'll call a not in my backyard amendment, similar to the language that we have in the bill about Sand Dunes State Forest, where people who moved into a forest because they like the trees now don't want those trees managed, and that now we have directed language dealing with that. We've been working with them directly as well. So as people talk about us needing to dispose of our land and get rid of the pieces that we have, this language could actually impede that. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I hate to use the word precedence as well, but this would set precedence for the legislature or for local residents to come in to your offices, ask us not to provide access to what they may have as a hunter's paradise that the county receives a pill payment before because nobody else has access to it. So this is an important issue, looking at the assets we have and how do we gain access to increase the value. It could have potential impacts to state trust land management and school trust land management as well, as we're looking to develop and sell some of those parcels, and this would be an opportunity to gain access to those parcels as well. So I can guarantee you this, we will exhaust every option possible before we will go to court. But retaining this right to go to court, possibly to sell this land, one of the options we're looking at is disposing of this land. It has federal ties to it, but we're looking at trying to, what is the best interest in this land? Should we dispose of it? And that could come about. But this would prohibit us from gaining fair market value for that land because we wouldn't be able to secure access to that. So, Mr. Chair, we do oppose the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Swierczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it's my understanding that this particular piece does have access above and beyond the private road that is under contention that this amendment would address. So it's not like it's a landlocked piece. It does have public access currently. This would be the department trying to gain a secondary access using private land. This simply doesn't preclude the department from negotiating in real terms as far as finances are concerned. It just simply addresses the action of bringing the courts into the negotiations, which I don't think, if you're an individual who owns land, whether it's adjoined, I own land that's personally adjoining to state land, and the last thing I want to do is have a department who is not elected to be suing me to use my land to have access to private to public land. And if that's that's why I'd ask for your vote.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Meyer, you mentioned that you've been negotiating with these people for quite some time, and is this road that's under consideration here, is this a platted road? I mean, has it been a matter of a public record for some time, or what's the status there?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, as I said previously, we can document use of this roadway for many, many decades. The records are vague, if not incomplete, about who, I mean, the township says they haven't spent any money on it, the county says they haven't spent any money on it. The road has been there. What we're looking to do would be to gain a prescriptive easement to the road, to allow us access to the parcel. Landowners previously have allowed us access to manage our lands. So we believe, a pretty strong case. We are negotiating or talking about other options. I believe one of the options would have to cross a railroad. So we're looking at trying to get across some of those areas or where we can get solid access. But as I mentioned, we're working with the county, meeting with the county this week to see how we can resolve this issue.
Thank you.
Is that you, Glenn?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Senator Ingerbritzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Meyer, I actually was part of the discussions when this was brought forward to my office, and it was explained to me very clearly what had been going on. And due to the traffic, most recent traffic, and we know there was a Indian gaming in that particular area, which has created more traffic now. And I believe the landowner at that time was cooperating fully with the DNR until there got to be a lot of activity there, and there turned out to be a lot of, and this has nothing to do with it, and other than the fact that there's a whole bunch of traffic there, and it was running out of control, and that's why there was a lot of garbage there and parties going on and things like that, so it got to be quite active, and that's why they put the barrier up. But how this came to a head is that I understand members from the DNR went out to gain access, could not. And can you tell me if they actually contacted the owner before they tried to cut the bolts or the chain off the access or not? I don't remember that.
Question, Mr. Chairman, members, and I'm trying to go back through my records here. We were informed by a person who wanted to hunt on this property, by a bear hunter who wanted to go back there and bait, I think it was in 2015, that this road was locked. We talked with the landowners who had the gate there, and they at that point in time said that they would unlock the gate so the person could bear bait back there and hunt. That actually did not occur. So they told us they would, then they did not unlock the gate for access to hunters to gain to the property. And that was in 2015. We previously went back and talked with those folks again. They had agreed to allow access during the hunting season, then they continued to keep the gate locked. The reference you're talking about, I believe, was this past summer, where we went there and they were there. Representative Green was there. The press was there. There was a newspaper article in the Bagley paper. We backed down. We did not unlock the gate. The gate has remained locked to this day. So that's some of the brief history on the issue. So previously, looking at these alternative accesses, potentially through county land on the west, we also have some trust fund land that may provide an access. But we still believe that there's a prescriptive use to this road, and if we do decide to sell that road or that property, the purchaser of that land would want to have rights over that road. So we would like to maintain our ability to pursue a prescriptive easement if we get to that point in time. This language would prohibit that.
Senator Ingerbritzen.
Mr. Chair, so how long have you been utilizing this road then over the years? How long has the DNR been used it to gain access?
Mr. Chairman, members, before the gate was put up in 2015, I believe, I'm looking at this 1989 survey option that was there. The gate had remained open for many, many years that we were using this road for. As you stated, it was the landowner's concerns for people who were, I believe, littering on some of their property, or one thing I heard that some people had a bonfire on some of the property. I don't have any proof of that, though. But the gate and the locks had recently gone up, and we've been accessing this parcel for many, many years.
So Mr. Chair, thank you for follow-up.
Yep.
So how long have you been actively seeking access that we talk about that you're going to do now? How long has the DNR been doing that to seek legal access?
Mr. Chairman, this issue arose, as I said, in 2015, and we've been trying to gain access since that point in time.
Senator?
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you said you've been trying to gain access. Have you been trying to work with the landowner to gain access?
Mr. Chair, yes. And as I said, we have discussed this with the landowners there. There's several parties that were there, and at that point in time in 2015, they allowed to have the gate unlocked so that hunters could access the state property that is a wildlife management area. They did not follow through with that agreement, and the gate remains locked, which has brought us to where we are today.
Well, members, I've been involved in some of the discussions on this as well, and I've got, again, I have the the map and the area or the satellite image, there are other points of access to this property in the to the west of the private property owners. It's all WMA land. To the best of my knowledge, there's no vehicles allowed in this area. And there's also some trust fund land there. And, you know, this wouldn't have come to a head. The road, as I understand, was built by private individuals 80 years ago to give them access to some other place, going across their private property and those things. And disturbances have increased in the area, and so they have decided that, in their mind, they're just closing their private road, and they want to keep things safe in their neighborhood and not have traffic going by at various times of the day. I appreciate the fact that the DNR is working with the landowners to try to come to some sort of an agreement on this. Yeah. So anyway, with that, yes, Senator Westrum, and then Senator Rood, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes.
Maybe I miss.
I think that there are some differences about whether or not this. I mean, Senator Utke was involved in it, and he seems to be pretty well informed as to some of the legal parts of whether or not this is a road. And there's been some work going on at the courthouse in Clearwater County, and he made reference to some of the work that he's done. So I think there's a lot of disagreement about what the actual legal status of this road is. Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer, maybe I missed it, but did you say, I understand there is a county road that runs along the south edge of this property as well. Is there other ways to access this with other points, or what's the reason that this road in controversy has to be the
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrum, as I mentioned, we are meeting with Commissioner Stensing and Newman and Line Commissioner Bruce Cox on Thursday. County State Aid Highway 27 is maybe what you're referring to, which runs to the north, straight north, half mile to the WMA. That would require a railroad crossing. I'm looking at an email I have here from staff. If the railroad would permit us a crossing, we could easily build an access trail beginning at County State Aid Highway 27 across State Trust Land, straight north a half mile of the wildlife management area. That's one of the options we're pursuing. But again, we would like to keep all options on the table. If we go to dispose of this land, we need to have access to it through that road.
Senator Westrum.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's helpful information to know that there would be. Sometimes property is landlocked, and that gets to be different about.
I agree.
An easement, but I wonder if I'm supportive of this, but you know, at least a delay, so everybody and involved could realize there's a lot of pressure, including the DNR and the citizens, to get this resolved. I also know constituents, when they're funding their opposition, i.e. taxpayers' dollars, go to challenge them. It gets to be hard to pay both sides of the legal costs, and so I'm sympathetic to that as well.
Senator Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whenever the word school trust are mentioned, it kind of piques my interest. So can you tell me how this does impact school trust land? You seem that we're going to be crossing, and just give me a brief explanation of how we're impacting school trust land.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rood, if we were to gain develop that access, we would need to compensate the trust for that route that we would be using for. So Game and Fish Fund would have to compensate the school trust fund for that route, that access to the wildlife management area.
Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That is a concern. We deal with school trust land access and the paying of the school trust land fund for access, and so that's something that always concerns me when, because it seems like we already owe the school trust fund considerable sums of money, and so if we were to owe them more money, I think we should figure out how we compensate them right off the top. And so I'd like that, you know, if we consider this, we should consider how we're going to compensate them right away instead of waiting, passing this, and then waiting till, I don't know, we already owe them $80 million in 2018, so I'd like to figure that out before we pass this amendment.
Representative Skudzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Rood, I would say that this is completely different. I agree that the state DNR should be meeting its obligations in the school trust. This bill has nothing to do with the school boards association or students from suing the DNR. For those, essentially unfunded uses that they're using for school trust to the tune of $80 million, this does not take the rights away for the school trust lands to sue the department. I think I'd encourage that, possibly. But this has nothing to do with that. This is a private landowner on private land that is just trying to maintain their property the way they deem it to be managed.
And Mr. Chair, I do believe that it does have something to do with school trust land, because now we are going to impact that, and it's going to, we're going to owe the school trust if we use it for access. If we don't go down this road, we will be accessing through school trust land, and so it does impact the school trust.
Representative Skudzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but this particular amendment has nothing to do with school trust.
Yep. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and to the author, and Senator Westerman had talked about maybe moving the date out a little further. If that would work, or be, if you would be open to something like that, in other words, forcing the hand here. And Mr. Knopf, maybe you can comment on that. We and I just had a sidebar about the date thing, if that would work out a little bit easier. Or,
well, Mr. Chair, what you and I talked about was putting a date on here, giving them some time to negotiate, but still put a temporary kind of prohibition on the DNR going down this route. So it would say on the amendment on 1.6 before the commissioner, it would say before July 1, 2018, comma, so that it would mean that the commissioner couldn't do that over the next year, but would be able to after that date, and the legislature would be back in session if they want to re-up this or extend it, they could do that. But it would put a date certain in there that they, after that date, the DNR would be able to initiate a civil action.
Thank you, Mr. Chair,
Mr. Knopf. My concern is that we don't know exactly what bills may be moving forward, whether it's policy or finance and how those things are comboing together. I would argue that we should probably put deference in the hands of a private landowner in this case, and allow that the DNR to work with a person rather than a court. In this particular case, I would not put a cap on it if it was up to me. I would keep the language as is. I think I have not spoken to Senator Utke, but as far as I'm concerned, I think keeping it as is would probably be a better step. And then I think the legislature could also take action next session to undo that if we feel that that would be in the best interest of private landowners and also the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not familiar with this parcel by any means. Certainly not anywhere close to the city of Champlin, I know that. But there's many issues here, I think, that we as a committee probably haven't fully examined. And this, to me, is a classic case of hopefully not going to court, but the court could be involved with all the evidence presented and all the complications that are involved. There is certainly an arbitrator and things. I don't see any reason why we couldn't step back from this a little bit with the July 2018 date and again force things to move forward one way or another, and we can always come back and enact an amendment similar to this. But there's so many issues here that we don't have the landowner here, Commissioner. The Commissioner is working off some very short notes, if we will. We're not seeing the plat. We're not seeing the whole history here. Sometimes it's prudent to take a step back before we take a step forward.
Representative Skudzinski.
Mr. Chair, with any amendment, I would rather get a half a bite at the apple than no bite at all. If that pleases potential folks in this committee that there would be a date involved with this, I will not pull the amendment, and I will vote for it as long as it gets on. So I don't know where. If there's some language there, but I mean, my argument would be to keep it as is. But if that gets people more comfortable, I think that's what we need to do.
So,
Mr. Chair,
centering
so I appreciate the discussion here, and I think by putting it out, and I think Mr. Ullman, Senate Representative, you're right, and it probably has not been discussed enough to do that, and we are still a work in progress here, so the date might be something. So, before maybe Senator Westrom's got a question.
Senator Westrom?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, does it make sense? I would support this amendment. I know Representative Green had talked to me about this issue, and I think Mr. Meyer from the DNR has caught the discussion. With Representative Swazinski, or maybe talking with Representative Green, maybe they could work out kind of provisions like Mr. Knopf has talked about, but perhaps we adopt it and maybe narrow it down perhaps after the parties could do a little more discussion, knowing that this language at least is in the bill with a placeholder. Would be one idea, but I'm open to your input, Mr. Chair, or Senator Ingebrigtsen or others.
Mm-hmm. Senator, Mr. Chair, thank you. And I guess what I would support would be if the author is open to the date we've talked about that puts it out there a year. Is that correct, Mr. Knopf? And maybe Mr. Knopf could at least offer up this as a
can't offer it.
No, I'm sorry. I know you can't, but you can help me. You can help me offer it up as a choice or as an amendment, and then I would like to hear it again back from the author of the amendment. Then I think I could support it.
Okay, so.
Mr. Chair, and this just goes, so I would just move that we include the date at the beginning, as Mr. Knopf spoke to, and I ask for your support.
Okay. Everybody clear on?
No.
Repeat that.
Mr. Chair, I'll repeat the amendment,
yep.
But I also want to say, if it's Representative Swazinski, you can just incorporate that into your amendment, so you don't have to vote twice.
Okay. Yep.
If you're willing to do that. But I'll just read it briefly. It's on 1.6, before the commissioner, insert before July 1, 2018, comma.
2018.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that amendment.
Okay.
Amended.
The A48 as amended has been moved. Representative Swazinski, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Thank you, members. I'm sorry, Senator Root.
Mr. Chair, I have the A16 amendment.
Senator Root, to your A16.
And Mr. Chair, I believe
I would do the same thing.
Mr. Miller?
Miller.
Is that yours? Okay. We'll explain the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, the A16 amendment does a couple of items. First of all, on lines 1.3 to 1.7, it basically takes out the appropriation for the Shell Rock Watershed District that's currently under the Pollution Control Agency. And that's for $300,000, and that was an environmental fund appropriation. What Senator Root is trying to do here in A16 is to take that $300,000 that was used for the Shell Rock Watershed District credit trading and then move that to the Board of Tourism for their grants program. So we have to transfer the money over from the environmental fund to the general fund to do that. So that what lines 1.8 through 1.10 does. There currently is a transfer of $2.5 million from the environmental fund to the general fund in the bill. So we would up that first year transfer from $2.5 to $2.8 million, and then it would go back to $2.5 million beyond that. Lines 1.11 is a technical change. This is fixing an appropriation that's already in the bill. It's a general fund appropriation for aquatic invasive species. This is being tracked currently correctly in the spreadsheet. This is just getting the right number in the bill. And on 1.13 and 1.14, these are also two technical changes. We're just putting paragraph lettering for some of the riders. And then Mr. Chairman, Senator Rood would also need to incorporate the additional money for the Board of Tourism into this amendment. I forgot to put that in here. So on page 33, line 9, we would put delete $14,848,000 and insert $15,148,000. And then on page 33, line 33, we would delete $600,000 and insert $900,000. So that would be those last two changes would be incorporated into this amendment. So basically, it was moving $300,000 from the Shell Rock Watershed District pilot program and moving that, it's one-time money, to the Board of Tourism.
Senator Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd appreciate your support.
Discussion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A16 amendment as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. Senator Westrum, you have the A-17 amendment.
A-17, that's what I thought, Mr. Chair.
To your amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the A-17 amendment, and members, the language on the buffers in this bill deal with some concerns about the Palmer amaranth, a noxious weed that's just recently shown its ugly head in Minnesota, coming from some seeds outside the state, as we understood it in our ag hearings. And the language in the bill would have the buffers, if until we have some seed that's certified or from Minnesota, or make sure that we had enough seed from Minnesota, it would be delayed temporarily until we had enough seed to be coming from our state, where we have the greatest chance of not having contaminated seeds. This language would modify this a little bit and allow it to come from other states, North Dakota, Manitoba, South Dakota, Minnesota. I guess there are some common areas it's grown and put together, but this would just be real clear that it's got to be certified to be weed-free, Palmer amaranth or other noxious weeds, and that's the amendment language I'm proposing. Mr. Chair, that's the intent, and so I'd be open to comments or questions. Mr. Chair, I think you were made aware of it, and if that's a slight move in the right direction, that's my intent, but I want to make sure we keep a serious focus on doing something good for the environment, quote-unquote, with the buffers, and then we spread Palmer amaranth, which came in a conservation seed from the information we received this year from last fall's plantings in southwest Minnesota, brings up a very big concern, and we don't want to be spreading a bigger problem than a cure. And so That's the idea, and that's the language in the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Westrom. And this is an issue that was brought to me, obviously, to my attention, and I appreciate you working with the farm groups and the grass seed growers and the seed growers and so forth around Minnesota who did have some concerns about this, and I appreciate you working with them. Members, other questions? Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, as we work through this process, I know some of the concern was that we didn't have seed that was grown and processed in Minnesota enough to plant the buffers. Is there seed available that's certified to be free of the Palmer amaranth? I mean, is that available? Is there a company that does that certifies that? Because I think part of the question was, would we have seeds to plant the buffers?
Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Rood, my understanding is generally yes. Some have told me we would probably maybe short of some supply in some areas or doing everything in Minnesota for a year or two if we had this original language in place, but we could ramp up and get there. And so I think that was reasonable, but my understanding is this, there would be supply, but I guess the counter argument in Mr. Clavin might be able to add some light to that, Mr. Chair, if we want to take any quick testimony on that. But my understanding is yes, but the short answer to the question also is if it's not available, we should not be moving forward with pushing more buffers or plantings if we can't make sure the weeds are out of there, because I think to eradicate those weeds is a very near impossible problem. Or a very expensive problem, especially if it gets out of hand. And Iowa, in just a couple of years, has seen it enter their state and just about taken over every farm field. There are many, many, many of them, from what I've heard. And we don't want to be like Iowa, so we're trying to get ahead of this. So, I don't know if that answers your question, Senator Rood, but that's kind of a long answer to a short question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rood and Senator Westrom, I appreciate that, because that was one of the issues that we were working through on the growing and processed in Minnesota, and if there is certified seed available, that would be helpful. So thank you.
Senator Thomas Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Senator Root's point and to the problem of not having enough seeds, maybe instead of taking out must use only seed mixes that were grown and processed in Minnesota, maybe we insert before must to the extent practicable, and then at the end of it, and are certified to be free of Palmer amaranth or other noxious weeds.
Leaving that.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about leaving it in, though.
Huh.
So instead of this, and maybe I should get a comment from you on that.
Senator Tomasoni, I know you know a lot about trees, but this guy knows a lot about the subject. Okay?
That's why I want an opinion on what I just said, because it may not be a good idea. I don't know.
Yeah, so, probably. All right. Mr. Clavin. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bruce Clavin for the record. I represent on this issue the Northern Seed Trade Association, and our members in this association are made up of seed producers from Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Manitoba. And they had heartburn over this issue. We testified against it in ag, and so did Bowser, about the territorial nature of seeds, because seeds blow around. And we've had mileage restrictions in past years here. There was a provision a few years ago that you had to get your seed within 25 miles of the project that you were trying to restore. We took a couple years to get that out. It just simply doesn't work. So having a geographical Minnesota-only reference is a problem. They didn't want in the association North Dakota to do the same thing or Manitoba to do the same thing and say you can only do something in your state with seed from your state. The irony is now that Palmer amaranth is here, the seed supply is potentially contaminated. What your bill should say is you should get it from Manitoba or someplace that doesn't have Palmer. There's also a molecular test that the Department of Ag runs to certify the seed. The Department of Ag is in charge of the seed, and they have a molecular test that certifies. These are microscopic seeds, very, very small, and they're easy to miss. And so we're working with Senator Westrom in the ag bill to have money for the noxious weed grant program and so forth to try to keep this a lid on this thing. Palmer is a huge, huge concern for the ag industry, especially in the southern third of the state. Soybean growers in particular are worried about this. So the geographic issue is what we were trying to get at. It when I saw it in the Senate bill this morning, I came to Senator Westrom and offered this alternative to try to say if it's certified, go ahead and use it, but take the geography out of it.
Thank you. Senator Westrom, comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, and I don't mind Senator Tomasoni's suggestion. I should have thought of it this morning. But so for now, I think maybe we need to stick with this language. But if Mr. Clavin thought that otherwise would work, I think it kind of gets to the same point. But I'm lukewarm to that idea, but it might be hard to do on the fly here. So.
It's hard enough to spell practicable. Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, and I appreciate the testimony, and I think that really answers the question I had as to whether we could have certified seed. And I think that as long as we can do that and we're really comfortable with that process, I think I would support Senator Westrom's amendment.
Representative Skudzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, you know, having a district that has been hit with this, it's obviously a big concern to my producers and to the folks that are dealing with that. Mr. Clavin spoke a little bit about the importance of the noxious weeds program. I think maybe we're funding that at about $300,000, but that $300,000 to combat an imported issue. That stuff was not grown here by itself. It was brought here because of a government program. And, you know, I like the language the way it was, and I appreciate the work Westrom has been working on this. I actually kind of like what you had to say, that, you know, if a state has been certified that it actually has it, that we should really look at limiting its importation from that particular state or region. I think, you know, maybe that conversation can continue to happen, but that might be a practicable advancement in the development of this bill, if we are to whatever we're doing with this bill as it moves forward.
Okay, Senator Westrom, final comments.
Mr. Chair, just while the buffers is right in front of us, I just want to use this time to make a couple of comments, because in the DE language in front of us, the one provision that I think is still very important for us to maybe consider a version of, or some language, is the language that I know has been controversial or concerning to some on the continuous flow of water. So we are talking actually waterways and not ditches and areas that seldom have a lot of water or don't have continuous water. That was taken out. But as we continue to try to find compromise and work on this for the constituents that are really concerned about it, that are affected, I just want to take this moment to kind of float some concern about us taking that out altogether, and want to work on some language to maybe try to at least help ensure ditches are flowing and cleaned out as we go ahead with implementing buffers, because it seems like it all should be connected rather than implement buffers and still have ditches not cleaned out, because that's another big issue, and water should be flowing to help make this work. And so I just raise that issue as we try to finesse this to make it work, but really take this the issue as serious as it needs to be. And so I think this has been a good discussion, and would urge members to support this modification, and I'm open to more discussion on it with Senator Representative Swazinski or Mr. Clavin and others. But we also don't want to have the unintended consequence of the price spiking for producers, and it just adds reasoning that this buffer language, with the state putting up the money for the cost of the buffers, are being important, because if it gets to be hard to find seed, we don't want to have to make the landowners bear that cost at any price either. And so I can foresee that being an issue down the road if it's harder to find clean seed, for sure. We're better off putting the clutch in and not just driving forward, before we can continue to work on in the next few days. And I know there's many in the audience that are interested in this issue. And, Mr. Chair, I want to continue working with you and the Senate Chair to get as good a change as to move forward with buffers that really will help the farmers that are very frustrated and concerned about some of these issues. So, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Westerman. Just to real quickly to your point about the ditch system and stuff, it's amazing to me the lack of understanding that some of the state agencies that are charged in with doing something with these buffers, the lack of understanding that they actually have. And in my district, it's very, very telling after having some conversations about how they don't understand. And hopefully we're making some progress towards that. So back to your amendment, Senator Westrum, on the A17. You've moved it to adopt as presented. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So all those in favor of the A17 as written on the sheet, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Thank you, Senator Westrum. I think that's it for amendments. Senator Ingerman.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, here's some other questions. Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, through the miracle of text messaging, it's my understanding that in 2014, the chairman of the committee that actually enacted that thing that I fixed today was Senator Marty.
Oh. That's why I asked. Okay.
Chair.
Yes, Senator Westbrook.
I just would like to ask Senator Tomasoni, what was the mistake he was referring to then in earlier comments?
I withdraw the mistake.
Okay. Anything else?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Robinson.
I guess, are we ready? I don't think we have any more amendments.
I was born that way.
Okay. I'd just like to thank, before we vote here, folks for all the work that they've done, and also, the commissioner's office and the meetings that they've had with us, and actually my meeting that I had with Governor Dayton was open and a very good conversation. Obviously, we didn't agree on some things, but nevertheless, I still had that conversation. And, of course, working with you guys has been certainly a pleasure, Chair Fabian, and looking forward to moving forward with some more days if need be. So with that, Mr. Chair, thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, members, I do want to point out that, we're doing our work. We established our joint legislative targets for this committee on April 28th. As per the governor's request, so we did our work. We negotiated with each other a legislative position on this Environmental Natural Resources Policy and Finance Bill as per the governor's request. And now my request is that the governor is going to get engaged in this process so that we can reach some three-way targets. I would hope that by Thursday of this week we can do that. And that's going to give us ample time to, quote, get our work done. And I think that it's important for us to bring that message out to the people and continue to do that. So before we go any further, too, I want to make sure that this is kind of my, this is my first time chairing a conference committee. I want to make sure procedurally, Ms. Taylor and Mr. Knopf, that we get things done in the right way to make sure that when we move at the end of the day today, we've got things down the way that we want to. And my intention is on this bill, we talked to Senator Ingebrigtsen, our intention is to lay this bill over. So help me through the process in terms of, and then what our vote is and so forth to park it here in this conference committee. So does somebody... Ms. Taylor, please.
Mr. Chair, you could just move to, just lay it over, and then if you wanted to have a motion for staff to prepare sort of a draft committee report or something, because I know there was some interest in having the language in a little bit better shape than having the DE with multiple amendments. You could just make a motion to have staff do that as well.
Okay. So, yeah, we want an unofficial engrossment is what we want.
Mr. Chair, what I recommend is right now you have the A17-0406 in front of you as it's been amended by the conference committee. I think what you could do is adopt that amendment and then lay it on the table with the instruction that that staff prepare some type of an engrossment. It can either be a new delete everything amendment or a committee engrossment. We can work that out with the revisor's office as to what form, but it will not be in a conference committee report form. It will be the A17-0406 amendment as amended by the conference committee today. You would adopt that, lay it on the table with instructions to staff to get it engrossed.
Ms. Taylor. Just making sure.
Mr. Chair, that sounds great.
Okay. Then I would so move. Okay. So all those in favor of the motion before us, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed? Okay. Okay. So then, members, now that we have this completed, I know that there's some commissioners here that have expressed an interest in being before us. I'm interested in hearing from them, and again, I confirm this with Senator Ingebrigtsen. We've heard what they are opposed to in the past. We've made some changes to the bills today. I'd be more than happy to hear their concerns with regards to the changes that we've made for the bill. But if we're going to hear the same concerns in the past, I'm, would just as soon not do that. I know a lot of people have got other things to do. But Commissioner Landwehr, and I will ask each of you commissioners as you come down, are you here to help me negotiate a bill, or are we just going to listen? Commissioner Landwehr.
Mr. Chair, members, I will not repeat the concerns we've expressed before, Mr. Chair. They are the same. I just want to make two notes, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Members, one of the big issues.
Identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, members. Tom Landwehr, Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you.
One of the concerns we have is just operating adjustment, the known inflationary increases going forward that are not considered in the funding recommendations that are here, and they are going to have an effect across all of our divisions. And so while some of these numbers look good in terms of maintaining the base funding, they don't acknowledge the reductions we're going to have to take as a result of that operating adjustment. And that'll be about 100 FTEs across the department, Mr. Chair, members. Second, I'd like to mention that the state government omnibus bill, too, has some substantial recommendations in it for fairly significant reductions. And until we know what that is, it's hard for us to say what that full impact will be on the state, the department's budget. So, again, we can't, Mr. Chair, members, it's very challenging to talk about negotiating when we don't even know what's going to happen as a result of that bill. And finally, Mr. Chair, members, I know there's language in there with respect to the governor. The governor has already said that he can't accept, and so I think that's something to be aware of as well.
Thank you. And, Commissioner, thank you for being here. I appreciate that. So when do you anticipate us being able to get together and negotiate?
Mr. Chair, members, again, I think until the state government bill is finalized, I don't see how we can have meaningful discussions, because we can't anticipate what the impact is going to be until we know what the impact of that bill is.
And then I would, remind members that it's going to be really hard for us to do anything until we can start moving forward negotiations-wise. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I asked the question earlier about the impact that this could have on the DNR's ability to put up timber to get us up to the 1 million market. It seems to me that there's funding here, but I heard you say something about FTEs, and I'm wondering if that, because I know that both the chairs are very concerned about forestry and about the LP project that would be successful, and so just give me your little take on what the potential
is. Mr. Chair, members, and that,
Commissioner, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, is that operating adjustment challenge that I mentioned, that will impact the division of forestry to the tune of at least $1 million. And so while, again, some of the FMIA adjustments here address some of the base level needs, that $1 million reduction is going to fall on the division of forestry. The operating adjustment differential, as in your spreadsheet for the general fund, is some $6.9 million, almost $7 million. There are only three general funded divisions in the department. One is forestry, one is ecological water resources, one parks and trails. So those general fund reductions, are essentially reductions by virtue of the known increases, are going to be felt across those three divisions.
Sorry, Tom Sony. And that's, again, something that we're going to be able to take up as soon as we can get started to negotiating. Commissioner Landwehr, I do want to raise one other issue with you real quickly. On Friday, we had first of this year, Lessard group got together. I was appointed to that by the commissioner. Chair Anderson opened it up for public comments at the end. And one of the people that was there came to the witness table, a citizen, and said that there were zero general fund dollars going to the Department of Natural Resources out of the budgets that are currently being considered here in this room. And members, I do want to point out to you on our spreadsheet that on line, I believe it's 324, excuse me, $204,110,000 of general fund dollars going to the DNR. And I just wanted to kind of correct that for a public record, and I think that you would agree with that after having looked at it.
Absolutely, Mr. Members. I would take that correction from the individuals who made it.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day. Commissioner Stein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is John Langstein, Commissioner of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I won't repeat the things, as you asked, Mr. Chair, that are concerning us from the bill. I will speak to three things today. First of all, thank you for adjusting language in the bill that addresses the provision for our water quality standards being suspended, which would have interrupted permitting for 53 industrial facilities and 166 municipal permittees. We think that's a positive move. We want to thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Secondly, on the work on the rural recycling program, we appreciate the work to continue the funding of the program, and also, Mr. Chair, for adjusting the language on the environmental review mandatory categories for feedlots. We appreciate those provisions that were adjusted. Executive Director Will Seifert of the EQB was here and had to depart, and I just wanted to convey his comments quickly that there were no changes in the bill that affect his bottom line for funding to the Environmental Quality Board. And lastly, Mr. Chair, as Commissioner Landwehr mentioned, there are provisions in other bills, notably for the Pollution Control Agency, the policy that would adjust the motor vehicle transfer fee out of the environmental fund that's in the transportation omnibus bill that is still hanging out there, as well as the omnibus state government bill. Lastly, on the financial matters, the transfer that this bill proposes for moving dollars from the environmental fund to the general fund increased from $2.8 million in FY18 and then an additional $2.5 million for every year after that. We're looking at that very carefully to see. It looks as though that puts us in the puts the environmental fund in the negative by FY19 due to additional burdens on the fund. And we're carefully reviewing that. We'll provide you with more information in the coming days.
Thank you. Questions or comments, members? Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, and I guess this goes to DNR as well. While it's easy to say that, well, we've got the state government bill we'd like to have in a different spot, that's one of the important reasons that the governor, in my history, only 21 years that I've been around here, you had three-way targets. And so it's incumbent upon you, and I hope you're communicating this to the governor, that the real way to have those issues resolved is coming up with a three-way number, not a two-way number, because there's a House, a Senate, and I've served in two of those bodies in the governor's office, which I haven't ever served in. But there's three legs to the stool, and it works much better if that stool has all three legs working at the same time, because in the past, and I can tell you, both bodies are different. I just hope that becomes the issue, because I don't think I've ever seen bills all be done this much in advance, or it's at least on the earlier end of things. We've got plenty of time, but if the governor doesn't engage in a third-way target in earnest, it's we'll do the best job we can, but I'm thinking that's a real problem here if we can't get him to engage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, we understand, and we also acknowledge that the governor put forward a complete package, and I think the governor is looking for the full description of all the bills and all the expenses that will lead to what we know is a mutual adjustment of those outcomes. It is going to take effort on all of our parts, and we understand that. I've had the pleasure of representing the administration in multiple governors, and I've seen the end of legislative session happen multiple different ways, and I'm interested in resolving the issues, as is the governor, and he has authorized us to negotiate on his behalf once we have a complete set of information to work with.
So, Commissioner Stein, just to be clear, you're not going to do anything with our bill until you have that quote complete, because our bill's done. We're ready to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my comments are that we aim to work with you on adjusting what we know can be rectified in policy, what we believe can be adjusted, and I think Commissioner Kudelka was here to speak to the landfill language at Freeway in Burnsville. That is an important issue we'll continue to work with you on. As I mentioned previously, we'll continue to work on the fiscal concerns that we may have with the bill that you just adopted or the report that you just adopted, and find out what we might offer in regards to that. We'll continue to be preparing for the adjustment of our budgets. However, there are some pending issues and other bills that we want to work with the governor's office to fully understand before we get to completing our conversation on the budget.
Thank you. Any other further comments? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and commissioners, all of you that are here, you just really should be hearing the message that's being sent by us that we're ready. Senator Westrom made it quite clear, we're ready a lot sooner than we have been in the past to sit down and negotiate. So the message should be coming from you to Governor today is the bill is passed, take a look at it. No different than a bonding bill. We start out at $1.7 billion. We start out at $600 million. We come to someplace in the middle. If that's his intention, we certainly need to hear about it and hear about it quickly. And I don't really think we need to hear any more of this government shutdown stuff, because we've got plenty of time to get it done now. We're not down to the last 15 minutes. We've got 3 weeks. So we're open to the governor. In fact, I'll send a letter to him after today and invite him into the process. But please do that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Director Jaski, you made it back from Thief River Falls. That's good.
I had a good visit, Mr. Chairman.
I'm anxious to hear from you.
Okay. Just a couple of things. I won't repeat what we had said earlier. I will acknowledge that there are other bills that do have relationship to our operations and some of our programs, including those that are providing funding to local governments who do most of the work that we manage through our agency. So the legacy bill is one of those, as mentioned earlier, the state government finance bill, which you heard Commissioner Langer mention. Those are two that are certainly related to the full picture of what we need to work out. We appreciate the removal of some of those reductions that were in the tails for the local government grants and the drainage work group. Restoring those funds, I think, is really important. We see that some riparian aid funding is in the bill, although it's not at the number that has been suggested by the counties and watershed districts as being sufficient to do the job. So we really are looking to have local administration of that project and that program, so we want to make sure that those funds are sufficient for them to do that work. And I haven't seen the language, but it sounded like Senator Westrom's amendment on the seed availability was helpful to make it broader so we can make sure that good seed is getting to the places it needs to go regardless of its source. So I will take a look at that and make sure it works as well. So With that, Mr. Chairman, I will end my comments.
Commissioner, and again to you too, or excuse me, Director Jasky. I got a promotion there, I guess. But to the issue of buffers, you were in Thief River Falls for a meeting last week. Some people have portrayed the buffer issue as being something that those of us here sitting in the legislature have just kind of come up with these ideas to kind of slow down the process, that we don't like clean water and so forth. Based on the conversations that you've had in rural Minnesota, in particular in Thief River Falls, can you and I agree that the issues that I brought forward at least are the issues that largely exist in the district that I represent?
Mr. Chairman, I would say, you know, as we go from one part of the state to another, the issues are a little bit different because the landscapes are different, right? And so we, in the current law, we have the ability to work with those different landscapes to fit practices to the place where the water quality benefits are going to be meaningful, and to not put something on the ground that's not going to be helpful, but put something on the ground that will be. And so that's true regardless of what part of the state you're looking at, but certainly that was also true in Thief River Falls, and we talked with those people up there on Thursday.
So your understanding of our ditch system now relative when you got to ride around with Neil Peterson, does that help shed any light on what this state representative is trying to do?
Mr. Chairman, I won't speak for what you're trying to do. I know you
well. I'm trying to make the buffer law work better. Okay?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I know you work very hard at that, and we are as well. And that's why I was up there, to see what those circumstances are, as I've done in other parts of the state as well. We're working to try and allow a custom fit for a water quality practice that will do some good. And that's what this law is about.
So when is the Bowser Board going to formally adopt their alternative practices?
Mr. Chairman, the law actually doesn't allow for us to adopt practices. It allows us to approve practices others suggest to us, but we have put forth some guidance that, as you heard in earlier testimony, includes this common alternative set of practices that local governments and landowners can use.
Right, but it's my understanding that your board needs to do some sort of a formal adoption of those alternative practices.
Mr. Chairman, let me just... There's two actual steps. One is already completed. Those common alternative practices are guidance. Those are ready to go right now. They're not needing any additional approval. Those are ready to go. If someone wants to bring us alternative practices, they are welcome to do that anytime. We've got a couple of organizations that are working with us to do that very thing. But that six-pack of common alternative practices is ready to go and being used as we speak.
So have you given consideration to the seventh item, making it a seven-pack, to more expressly state or other practices as a determinant at the local level?
Mr. Chairman, we are working on a variation of one of the alternative practices in that common bundle, which would deal with the public drainage systems that we have in very flat landscapes, which would be Red River Valley, basically, in Minnesota, because USDA practice standards really don't fit that type of landscape. So we are working on that, and we will have that ready hopefully into this week. If anyone else wants to bring us ideas, we'll be looking at those as well. But it's not a one and done. It's an ever-evolving process.
So just to be clear, are you or are you not going to include that final, what I consider to be the final piece of the puzzle, that allows for other practices as determined at the local level?
Mr. Chairman, just to be clear, they are all applied at the local level with local decision making. Our information is guidance to them to give them a starting point for that decision.
Oh, good. It's good to get that on the record. And with regards to then the grass bottom ditches that we have up there, mm-hmm. What do you anticipate for that, which makes up 80% of our drainage system?
Mr. Chairman, what we're looking at is a derivation of what we have in number four in that six-pack, which is dealing with public ditches. And so there, given if my staff don't get sick or anything else happens, we are pretty thin on staff. But if everything goes as planned, we hope to have that finished by the end of the week.
Thank you. Representative Ugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Jasky, many of the things that Chair Fabian has talked about were my questions. You know, I'm a Metro legislator, and I watched this this buffer controversy, and I think we've made tremendous progress and everything else. But you said it yourself. You know, it's not one size fits all. And these alternative practices, to me, you know, we have a large state. We have many, many different situations with our rural farmers in their fields and the topography and everything else. I'd like to commend you. I think you're on the right track here. By now we have a six-pack, maybe a seven-pack, maybe it's even going to be an eight-pack. But it's going to get the job done. One size is not going to fit all. And my constituents in the Champlain Coon Rapids area and things like that, it's really the outdoors people that are concerned about this. And I think really some of the publicity has been detrimental, and I hope that your agency can move forward to help people understand that we're all working together on this thing, and we're frankly pretty close. I think we're pretty close. And we all have the same issue that we want clean water in Minnesota. But I would hope that you continue to expand the alternative practices that you're working on now, because I think that's the answer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ublum. Anything else? Thank you, Director Jackson. I appreciate your help. Okay. Anything else? All right, with that, we're adjourned. Thank you, members.